Welcome to the next webisode of 365.live, and today I have with me Dave Nixon from the UK. So Dave, we've not crossed paths before now, so I guess just to sort of get some introductions out through the door. So who are you? Who do you work for? What's your role?
Sure. So hi Mark, I'm Dave Nixon. I'm a practice manager at Business Agility. We specialise in SharePoint, and I've been working with SharePoint since Project Tahoe, which is sort of 2001.
Right.
So I've seen it mature over the years, shall we say.
Yeah. So what made you, out of all the Microsoft products you could choose, what made you choose SharePoint as your line of specialty?
It was an odd one, really. I was working on a large government contract at the time for a large American software company.
Yeah.
And my job was to find a portal solution for the client.
Yeah.
And I was tasked with selecting between Oracle, Plumtree, WebSphere, which were the portals of the time. And Microsoft, who were on site, because it was a large government client, gave me a disk which said Project Tahoe on it, which was SharePoint.
Right.
And I came across it quite by mistake. My initial role was to architect a solution across a number of government departments. Mm-hmm. And it was just purely by chance that I picked up SharePoint.
All right. I mean, what were your initial thoughts when you were comparing SharePoint with the other platforms that were out at that time? I mean, what made you choose SharePoint as opposed to the others?
Sure. So the selection process was wholly based upon three things: functionality, price, and usability. Functionality-wise, the Oracle portal was fantastic, but it required a whole level of understanding PL, SQL, just to get it up and running.
Right. Okay.
And that was a similar story with the other portal products. The great thing about SharePoint, or Tahoe as it was then, is the great thing about many Microsoft products, which is it was easy to install, very easy to configure, and the users were up and running in no time without having any requirement whatsoever to write any level of code.
Okay, I mean, I guess SharePoint is pretty much probably the most misunderstood Microsoft application ever, right?
Absolutely.
So really, if you had to summarize it into maybe three or five things, what are the key things that SharePoint delivers to businesses?
I think historically SharePoint has grown up gradually. And when you look at it over a period of years, it's not an old platform. Mm-hmm. The key thing about SharePoint is, and you've seen this on a thousand slide decks, is that the Swiss Army knife is always the interpretation of SharePoint.
Yeah.
And it's always a jack of all trades, master of none. And it's not anymore. It is a jack of all trades, master of many.
Okay.
And it's moved into areas that people didn't anticipate it would. So service-oriented architecture was the big push into the cloud. The search service was a huge change. Mm-hmm. And then it's also expanded in areas such as document management and workflow management. And those are areas that we usually reserved for the big players in those areas.
Okay.
There is the other side of the coin, which is, being a Swiss Army knife,
yeah,
then there is a commercial aspect to that, which is, you know, why buy a document management product,
yeah,
if you can live with what SharePoint does? So SharePoint also represents a level of sunsetting of legacy applications.
Okay.
And you've got to remember, SharePoint's a platform now, it's not an application.
Okay.
So as a platform, it's the ability to consume those services to meet business needs is critical.
Yeah.
And there's very few platforms out there that will do that.
And is that probably the reason why it's become probably so popular in the last sort of few years?
I think, I think that really is the commercial aspect of being able to pick and choose from a platform of what you want to roll out business functionality-wise. And you also have to remember to some degree that there is the marketing power behind Microsoft that's also assisted in pushing SharePoint to the forefront.
I mean, when you spin it up on Office 365, you get it for default, right? With any enterprise subscription, I mean, you're given this app dev homepage and away you go. I mean, where would you direct people to start with a SharePoint implementation? Because out of the box, it doesn't make sense to the people who haven't played with
No,
it.
it really doesn't. And I would say, as anxious as people are to get hold of all of this great functionality that Microsoft are releasing, so if you look at Groups, Teams, Planner, Sway, they're built upon SharePoint. So within the scope of our discussion today, they come under the remit of SharePoint. I think what you've got to do is, because SharePoint is such a huge platform now, you've got to take a step back and you've got to think about scoping out these applications and planning. And there's one area that people just don't do, and that's governance. So, Planner, what are we going to use Planner for? Is Planner going to replace something that we already have, like a project management system? Groups, Teams, the same should be applied to those. So how are you going to scope them out from a business context? Because when SharePoint initially came out, and maybe up to 2010, SharePoint's remit was to get rid of islands of data, which is, been retermed nowadays as the Internet of Things to a certain degree. And master data management was key. So how are we going to bring all of our business information that is disparate islands of data into one place? And the portal aspect of SharePoint was the primary driver behind that.
I mean, in terms of, sorry.
Nowadays, yeah, absolutely. Nowadays, if we're not careful and if we don't stand back and plan it properly, we're going to have islands of applications with data inside them.
Obviously, SharePoint is a massive product, and the ecosystem or the environment can get scale out very, very rapidly. I mean, as an admin, I mean, how do you control, where your data is, how many copies of data you've got in different folders in SharePoint, and how do you prevent people from accidentally sharing or even on purpose sharing confidential information, that's on like an internal SharePoint site with external parties, especially with SharePoint Online, for instance.
It's what you have to do is you have to look at SharePoint Online now as a separate platform, really, because in order to do those things on-prem, it's very difficult. But one of the things that we often ignore with 365 is the complementary products that underlie 365. So, example, rights management services. If you want to stop people emailing attachments of core business data or secure information, then you can do that. We've got DLP, we've got all manner of different services that we can layer on top of SharePoint to remove a level of governance and security. But ultimately, what it boils down to is governance, security. And there is a very important aspect that people often forget, and I try and drive this all of the time, is information architecture. So where is information going to sit? How are we going to describe it? If we know where it is and how to describe it, then we can put a layer of governance on top of it to stop people doing those things that they shouldn't.
Sure. I mean,
That layer of governance should be absolutely seamless to the end user. They should not be aware of it at all. It should only kick in when people are doing things outside of a governance plan.
I mean, for 365, like you said, there's a lot of complementary services, different things you can have in Azure AD Premium and all that type of stuff. And I think people, traditionally look at applications a very kind of siloed approach where you deploy it on premises. application, it's Exchange, for instance, or maybe SharePoint, you know, in that as well. It's what can that application do? Whereas in the cloud, it's more of a suite of applications that all work together, yes. And it's how you stitch them together to make that product or solution work for the business. That's the most
absolutely.
That's the absolutely. That's a specialty, right? So.
Yeah, and it really is. So when we engage with clients, and we do, say, let's say we do a requirements workshop, the first thing that we do is completely take technology out of a requirements gathering process. And it's really about what does the business want from an application. Where expertise comes into all of this is mapping those business requirements onto the layers of services that SharePoint allows us to consume.
Yep.
So for example, if a client wants to automatically process invoices, then you know that there's going to be an element of document management in there. Yep. You know there's going to certainly be an element of workflow in there. And then there's going to be some complementary services that you're going to want to consume around life cycle of a document and security.
Yeah.
And the great thing is about SharePoint is layering of those services is exposed through the platform itself. So you don't have to consume a separate web service, say for security, or a separate API for document management.
Yeah.
It's embedded and underpinned within the platform. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the real sort of good points of SharePoint is that those services may be disparate in the underlying architecture, but when they're exposed to people like you and I, then we can cobble them together, for want of a better phrase, into palatable business solutions.
So, just a quick question, because obviously OneDrive for Business is pretty much SharePoint. It's just a personal site for a SharePoint.
Yes.
Pretty much in a nutshell. As people start to use, you know, put documents in their OneDrive for Business repository and start to use company shared document repositories and what have you, do you have the same sort of controls in OneDrive as you do for like a normal SharePoint site, for instance? How do you?
So that's one of the. There are a number of gaps in all of the products that Microsoft are releasing through 365, and you know that's understandable because it's their rate of change and release of applications on 365 is pretty rapid. So it's really a scoping exercise of OneDrive. So when you, from a business perspective, when you install the latest OneDrive client, you're basically installing two instances. One is OneDrive for Business, which is your business documents. And then the other is your personal OneDrive space that you get as part of an E3 license, let's say, for example. The difficulty, and I do complain about this somewhat, shall we say, on various social networks.
Oh, we all complain.
Yes. It's whether we're listened to. That's the interesting part. The difficulty about OneDrive is that you can't overlay it at the moment with a central taxonomy or classification scheme.
Okay.
So if you say, right, okay, so we're going to allow users to store, let's keep on the same theme. We're going to allow users to upload invoices to OneDrive. What OneDrive won't give us is a taxonomy, so it won't say where in our classification scheme this invoice sits.
Yeah.
It won't say what's going to happen to this invoice through its life cycle. And still, there is very, very limited controls over metadata management of documents in OneDrive. So what we tend to do is, again, a scoping exercise to say, let's treat OneDrive like any of the other applications. And let's say OneDrive is going to be used for this. It's not going to be used for this.
Yeah.
Until we have those controls in OneDrive that we have, say, in SharePoint document libraries, then that's all that we can do at the moment.
Okay.
Where OneDrive is absolutely fantastic is is for synchronizing document libraries. It's brilliant for that. So if I'm in London tomorrow and I want to work on a document on the train, 2 hours journey down to London, then I know that once I'm online again and my OneDrive client kicks in, then that document is synchronized with the server version. And small things like that are where OneDrive adds real value.
Yeah. I mean, when we talk about large sort of shared document repositories, do you find customers or especially end users, they sort of reluctant to migrate to SharePoint document repositories because they're used to sort of the file browser mentality and the
absolutely.
File services? So how do you get over that?
What you've got to do, so if you, it's like anything else, if you're going to migrate from A to B, part of the user adoption strategy of migrating from A to B is not pushing the users over from A to B. It is providing advice and guidance and demonstration of the business value of doing that. And when you look at particularly user adoption of migration, you have to look at two things. One, what advantages or benefits to the business? Mm-hmm. Why are we doing this? The other one is, how is this going to assist the user? So perfect example is a new starter at any company.
Yep.
If a new starter jumps onto a file share and they don't understand the logical structure of that folder hierarchy, then they're lost completely. If you then say, okay, well, we're going to migrate these file shares into SharePoint, but instead of using folders, we're going to use metadata or we're going to use taxonomy navigation, then that serves two purposes. One, we're moving away from folders, and essentially folders are ways of hiding information, if you want to be critical, unless you understand the hierarchy of the folders. So by exposing those documents with simple metadata, we're moving away from hiding information. Mm-hmm. The other side of it is folders are used for containers. Now, if you think that a modern document library in SharePoint will hold millions of documents, then there's no need to have those containers. You can have document libraries. One of the things that we are finding now is that people are using document libraries for the business process around a document, so approval and review, etc. But they're actually exposing document libraries or surfacing the information in document libraries with the very, very powerful search service and display templates. And that we've seen that come on leaps and bounds over the last 18 months.
Cool. I mean, aside from document management, what are the main uses of a SharePoint in like in a modern day business of today?
I think, so it's interesting. There are three core components that we see when we engage with customers. And it's quite interesting because these three core components haven't changed since I first picked up SharePoint, which are intranets. Almost every client wants an intranet. The second one is document management, which we've already discussed. And the third one is business process automation, so workflows, automating simple business processes to remove the risk of human intervention. As clever as we think we all are, the risk in IT within a business perspective usually falls down to human risk. That is us not being as clever as we think we are. And the business process automation through workflow of SharePoint helps us reduce that risk.
So with the increase that the workflows, I mean, I'm not a developer, so I'm guessing for workflows, you need the SharePoint designer piece, you need to start coding some stuff up from APIs and what have you. So let's say I'm a business, I've deployed SharePoint on premises, let's say for argument's sake, it's 2013 version, I've deployed all these custom workflows. I mean, does that prevent me from upgrading? I mean, what are the considerations that we have to undertake when we've got a massive SharePoint deployment, when we start considering maybe a version jump or even a jump to the cloud?
It's a difficult one. So a version jump on-prem should be a simple process in that you should have. So imagine that you're going to move from 2013 to 2016 on-prem. Mm-hmm. Then you should never, ever make that jump without due process. And due process for on-prem is setting up a separate form. And moving your content databases onto that farm purely for the content.
Yeah.
And then analyzing what elements of your 2013 farm won't move over. So there's some very simple things that always cause problems. One is workflows,
yeah.
Two is branding, and three are bespoke solutions. And there's two ways of looking at this. The first way is to look at the functionality mm-hmm. within SharePoint, and when you move from 2013 to 2016, how has the functionality changed?
Yep.
And the other thing, which is key, is looking at the underlying infrastructure. How has that changed? One of the gotchas always with SharePoint and many other Microsoft products is moving from, say, .NET 3.5 to .NET 4.
Yeah.
You know, if you've coded with especially server-side code with that in mind, then there's a level of deprecation that you have to handle. The other side of it is moving on-prem to 365, and that's a different animal because you've got total control over your code in on-prem, and then you move into a 365 model where you don't have that. At best, you're going to have to start looking at client-side, but you're hoping that the jump from on-prem to 365 is not an overnight jump.
Yeah.
And in order to prepare for that, you have to have a preparation time. Again, it's all about planning. It's got nothing to do with technology often.
Yeah.
And it is. If we're going to move from 2013 to Office 365 and our roadmap is for 2 years, then you should start looking at the code that you've deployed or anything that's bespoke on there.
Yep.
And say, right, moving forward, any new requirements we will build with the cloud in mind. So we will use client-side. We'll use JavaScript. We'll use Angular. We'll use Breeze. We'll use Knockout. And then...
Don't mean critical... nothing to me, by the way.
Okay, of course. So any complementary code repositories that we can use to replace server-side code, let's use right. them.
Okay.
And that's well documented, you know, in the blog landscape. The other thing to consider is when you've got code that is core business critical, then you must prioritize that. So if you have a workflow that basically runs your new starters into your organization and you have 10 new starters every month, then you need to prioritize what code is going to be implemented in the cloud and how you're going to change that code. And it really, unfortunately, there is no sexy solution. There are some fantastic tools out there mm-hmm. by ShareGate and Metalogix and a whole range of suppliers. But there is gaps in each one.
Okay.
There always will be gaps in each
one. Can you do SharePoint hybrid, for instance, like you can with other applications? Is it like a hybrid step or is it two steps?
Hybrid's not there. Hybrid is a very, very small portion of SharePoint. So things like hybrid search and the ability to move documents from on-prem to your Office 365 environments there. But it is a very small proportion. It's just scratching the surface.
Okay. I mean, obviously... one of the biggest points you mentioned before was the fact that you're giving some of the control back to Microsoft in what you can do in 365's version of SharePoint. So
absolutely.
Does that mean there are some, you know, you can do more on-premise than you can do in 365 right now in terms of like if you can just sort of generalize it as such? What are the key
of
limitations
course.
That you get with SharePoint Online now?
Of course. So... When you're on-prem, it's your server, whether it's hosted by Rackspace or it's your web services or whatever. If you have control of a piece of tin, then you can do what you want with that piece of tin. And that opens a whole level of danger as well as possibilities. So, for example, let's say you want to run something every hour that goes into a set of document libraries and make sure that something's happened. Then you would create a timer job, and that would run on your SharePoint farm under a timer job.
Yep.
And you have total control over that. If you have a timer job like that, which is a really powerful part of SharePoint,
mm-hmm.
you can't reproduce that in the cloud, because you're moving from a piece of tin that you own,
yep.
to a piece of tin
that
is somewhere that yeah. you're sharing with a whole heap of other people and businesses.
Yeah.
So things like timer jobs are real gotchas. And the only way around it is to find a different solution of doing things.
I guess you've got pretty much client-side object models or Azure absolutely. Web jobs or something.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Or hook into, so batch jobs on timers are crucial. So there are a number of solution providers out there that allow you to jump onto their batch schedule and then hook back into Office 365.
Right.
But you'll never have that level of control. But all it means is, as developers, we change our operating model from being full control and risky to some degree,
yeah.
to limited control and more innovative.
Mm-hmm.
You've just got to be more innovative with how you deploy your solutions in 365. You can still continue to develop some fantastic things. It just means that you've got a scope that you're limited to develop in, which is a good thing to some degree.
Yeah, I mean, on the flip side, I guess, one of the frustrations of that is that you're taking very much sort of siloed, containerized app where everything is pretty much located on maybe one piece of tin, for instance.
Yes.
And then you're having to use bits and pieces of Azure Cloud, bits and pieces of third party,
yes.
bits and pieces of maybe a virtual machine with CSOM on it, with some kind of app
yeah.
running there. I mean, that sort of challenge, you know, it takes a nice tidy product and then breaks
yes.
it out into a million pieces, and it becomes
it does.
A minefield.
It does, and one of the issues with 365 development is exactly what you just said there. You are breaking up what used to be a sealed package
yeah.
into a package that is consuming various services, various connections, and bringing them into one place. And it's I bang on about this in seminars quite often, which is SharePoint, and particularly SharePoint in 365, is becoming the glue between
yeah.
disparate applications. And coding that glue is sometimes very difficult.
Yeah.
But once you've coded that glue, you can reuse that glue on other applications, depending on how open you make your application.
I mean, with that challenge in mind, from your experience and your customers and what they're doing, are you seeing, you know, a big sort of transition to the cloud, or people more reserved and sort of hanging fire and just dipping their toe in the water? How's that landscape bearing out for you?
It's interesting, and it's interesting because, you know, traditionally speaking, you may get a very large organization, and they will take on something like 365 wholeheartedly.
Mm-hmm.
And then you may get a smaller organization who just dips their finger, dips the toe in the water. Conversely, you will get small businesses and small startups that will just start in the cloud and have never been aware of on-prem. But where organizations are or embracing the cloud, then we've found that most of them are dipping the toe in.
Yeah.
There is no massive embrace at the moment. We're not, obviously you've got the odd sort of organization that are well advertised, that have jumped into the cloud and have moved all of the business processes there. But I can guarantee you that
there'll be too many compromises.
There will have been a 3-year lead up of planning to do that. You know, so there are But we're finding more and more organizations are dipping the toe in the cloud. And where they're dipping the toe into the cloud is not your core SharePoint functionality, because they know they can do document management in the cloud. They know they can do search. They know they can do workflows in the cloud. Where they're dipping the toe in is around things like Groups, Planner, Teams, Sway, etc.
Yeah.
And again, we're telling people, it's great to have a look at these things, but you have to roll them out with a business scope in mind.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, otherwise it's a free-for-all, right? And it'll just,
oh, of course,
the tenant will be a mess, and it'll be a four-year program to get them back to a logical.
Yes, I mean, I know of clients, my clients and other practices clients, where they haven't dipped the toe in, they've just absolutely dived in. Mm-hmm. And then they've taken a step back and thought, hang on a minute, we've got data all over the place here,
yeah,
in applications that are not connected.
Yeah.
So, and that causes its own problems.
Yeah. I mean, do you think, I mean, obviously Microsoft at this very moment in time are very much pushing cloud first, you know,
yeah,
on premises, maybe sometime in the future, maybe not, you know,
yeah.
And when you ask, you know, the questions to them, it's always the answer's cloud. What's the question, you know, before
yes,
you asked it. So
absolutely.
I guess Office 365, SharePoint is the future. But do you ever ever see that remaining long term, or do you reckon there will always be, they'll develop the hybrid scenario and push that more?
I think, and this may be me being cynical, I really think Microsoft do not want people on-prem. Mm-hmm. They've given a commitment to the next iteration of SharePoint still supporting on-prem, which is great for those users who are on-prem. But I think Microsoft's commitment to that on-prem is basically saying, we'll give you another 2 or 3 years to plan your move into the cloud.
Yeah.
I think, you know, if you look at the rollout of functionality within 365, you know, it's already light years ahead of on-prem.
Yeah. That's the same for every application in 365.
Of course. Of course.
With the exception of Skype at this moment in time, but that's soon to change.
Yeah. So I think Microsoft are laying those large enterprises who have a massive investment in on-prem. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, Microsoft are doing the right thing by saying, well, okay, we want you in the cloud, but we're going to give you more security and more compliance. You could get on-prem. So, for example, you know, a lot of clients say to me, well, you know, we don't want to move to the cloud because it's, you know, because of the security implications. And my answer is always, well, if you look at the security compliance that Microsoft has in the cloud, you know, IL1, 2, then if you go back to your on-prem network guys and ask them to be that compliant, they couldn't be. They would want a budget of £2 or 3 million.
Oh,
so,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's cheap as chips to move it to the cloud, right? And you get all that stuff. So
exactly, and you know, all of the data protection stuff that's coming. Microsoft 365 is already 75% there in their tooling to support that.
Yeah,
compliance, ISOs. We've even got compliance dictionaries for each region that you're in 365. So if you're in the UK, you've got a compliance dictionary for UK government. You've got one for Spain. You've got one for Italy. You've got one for... So regardless of your region, you can actually look into 365, look at the data you've got, and it will give you a compliance report.
Yeah.
You couldn't possibly do that on-prem without a whole heap of applications on top.
Oh, no, exactly. I mean, we're at the start now of the digital transformation era. You know, it's about, you know, transitioning from old world mentality to new world, and
it is.
And it's taking the customers on that journey. I mean, if you had a, you know, if you had a direct line to the product group, or you were in charge of the product group of SharePoint, I mean, where do you see the future of SharePoint going? And what would that be?
I would say the first thing to say to the product group is be more open with your on-prem customers. And stop all of this fear mongering around, you know, are we how long's on-prem going to last, etc., and give a clear roadmap, maybe for the next 5 years, of what's going to happen. Because I'm sure you're aware of this, the SharePoint rumor mill is just crazy sometimes.
It's in every application, right? So we have,
Yes.
so
Yeah.
it's always a
Absolutely.
question of, is the vnext always going to be the last, you know? And
Exactly. And they need to sort of stop dodging around the issue and just be firm and say, yes, it is. We want you in the cloud. And that's fine, as long as they're honest. I think the other side of where SharePoint is gonna be is I absolutely adore that they're releasing all of these applications and functionality. But I would prefer that they release them with some level of governance behind them. So we've mentioned taxonomy in OneDrive, groups, and teams. There's huge holes in there from a governance perspective. So very simple example in Teams, having a private channel. Something small like that would make a whole heap of difference. And I think I admire the rate of change and rate of release of these applications. What I don't admire is the holes in them at the moment. But on the good
Isn't
side
that
of
a
things,
byproduct of innovation, though?
absolutely,
You've got an
absolutely.
idea, you throw it out to the masses, see if it sticks. If it sticks, develop it further,
Absolutely.
so.
Yeah. And it's, people have always leveled at Microsoft that the end users are the testers, and that's just, that's nonsense. There's been a lot of work and effort put into groups and Planner and Teams. I think the final thing I would say about what I would want from SharePoint is for them to continue the route that they're going down as far as development's concerned. We've got a model now in SharePoint of what needs to be accomplished in order to develop against the platform. We've got TypeScript and we've got a proper SharePoint model now.
You got consistency, right? So development's
Exactly.
faster, so
Exactly. And
yeah,
we don't want to go back to those days of sandbox is the way to go, and then the next iteration we don't support sandbox anymore. So I think that the route that they're going on now around development is fantastic. I think also the fact that they've engaged GitHub, where you can pull down all manner of libraries to help you, complementary JavaScript to help you develop applications in SharePoint is phenomenal. I think the development route is brilliant. I think the compliance route is brilliant. And I think the functionality route is brilliant. Whether the name SharePoint remains, we'll have to see.
what do you
But
think it'll change to?
many moons ago, people had problems with user adoption, and they were saying SharePoint, 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 instead of intranet and a timesheet system and a HR system. And I think we're getting into that gray area again. I think sort of people who are long in the tooth like me will always call it SharePoint, but I think the naming convention of that underpinning technology doesn't really matter.
No, sorry, it's more about the apps that leverage the service.
Absolutely. And SharePoint will be the platform on which these applications consume services.
It's the same with Teams, right? So Teams is nothing more than the Skype backend stitched together
Exactly.
with Office
Yes.
365, stitched together with a SharePoint site for document storage, stitched together with,
Yes.
connectors to here, there, and everywhere. So it's just leveraging the components of, or the
Absolutely.
core components of 365 to build a solution that tax a purpose. And
Yes.
so yeah, I do think a similar vein to yourself, where we'll just lose SharePoint, Exchange, Skype for Business
Yeah.
names. They'll just be workloads in the back that you just leverage apps on top of. So
Absolutely.
it makes sense, though.
Absolutely, yeah. And there's some. One of the great things that Microsoft have done is they've paid homage almost to the massive ecosystem of suppliers out there. you know, and they're not treading on too many toes at the moment, which is great. So they're not releasing, you know, migration tools, because there's an ecosystem of partners out there that'll do that, you know.
Yeah, but also that drives innovation and
competition
is healthy, and
that
drives it as well, right? So it's a very sort of clever model, you know, develop 80% of a platform, give you 20% to the masses to fill that gap.
Absolutely. I think the model that they're using in Office 365 and SharePoint is a good model at the moment. It really does encourage innovation. You know, and I think from a startup's perspective, the ability to buy, say, E3 licenses, set up your whole infrastructure with three clicks, and then have that ability of a complementary service from Microsoft like Fast Track, is brilliant. It really is. And from my perspective, as a manager of a gold partner, it's great, because you engage with the clients at the beginning and you can take them through the journey. And you can help them innovate along their journey.
Yeah, sure.
Which is great. So I think they're going in the right direction with the development model and the release model. We'd just like to see a few less holes.
Yeah, wouldn't be all right. So anyway, that's all we've got time for on this episode. So I want to thank you very much for spending some time with us.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much for all that input that you've given us. And yeah, so we'll catch up with you again sometime soon when we've got more updates around SharePoint.
Brilliant. Thanks a lot for your time.
No problem.
Cheers.